All right. Well, welcome everybody. I have really been looking forward to this call for a number of weeks now. We're going to be diving into the topic of gender inclusion, which I'm not even going to say really anything about in the intro because I have so much to learn on this topic that I don't even want to botch it up in the intro. But what I will say is this. First of all, Stanley, I'll read your bio in a minute, but thank you so much for being willing and agreeing to share your wisdom and your expertise and spend this time with us. I'm just so excited. I know for me, and this is one of the reasons why I wanted to for us to have this call, and I know that everybody in Sacred Depth or most everybody in Sacred Depths probably feels the same way. I personally, in my work and in my personal life, am always looking to create spaces that are as nurturing as possible for everybody involved, to do, not only to do as little harm as possible, but to create nurturing spaces. And with all of that, the more that I learn and the more that I know, I realize the less that I know. And that the, you know, like we learn about in Sacred Depths, like there are just filters that get in the way and there are learned habits and messages that get in the way. And it's really important to me to continue on this path of learning so that I can do better and better. And I feel like we're all in it together, you know, learning together here. So I'm thrilled to have this time and space. I'm going to read your official bio because it is very impressive and it got me like even more excited as I was rereading it. So here it goes. Hold on, let me get my glasses on. Stanley Edward is a full-time reconciler of paradox, both in their lived experiences and in the professional hats they wear. In their civilian career, Stanley is a transpersonal coach, metaphysical practitioner, and gender inclusion advocate. He is also a U.S. Army Reserve soldier of more than 20 years, beginning his career in military police, eventually transitioning to public affairs, and now serving as a military equal opportunity advisor since 2015. And how amazing is that, that there are military equal opportunity advisors. Stanley identifies as gay and gender nonconforming and served during the Don't Ask, Don't Tell era of military police and after its repeal. He spent more than 32 months deployed to the Middle East, as well as middle stateside mobilizations, including orders to Northern Virginia on September 11th, 2001. His upbringing in fundamentalist religion, including early attempts at changing his sexual orientation from gay to straight, have greatly informed his understanding of the other, in quotation marks, as he helps people reconcile their own paradoxical experiences and create greater alignment with their soul. During his lifetime, he's been a grocery store bagger, me too, theme park operations supervisor, radio DJ in Baghdad, keynote speaker, costumed entertainer for children's birthday parties, prison guard, coffee shop store manager, tarot and Akashic Records consultant, military TV news reporter and anchor, magazine editor and writer. His Huffington Post story called What Happened When I Wore High Heels to My Military Training Course discusses his first experiences with gender nonconformance in the military. Stanley's ongoing work aims to help all of us engage deeply with our own understanding of things like sex, gender, sexual orientation and spirituality, and consider how our approach to those aspects of self impact our life experience and the people around us. So Stanley, I'm gonna let you lead and you know, I'll kind of interject or ask questions, you know, here and there as we go along. And I know that we're gonna open it up for Q&A as well, but I'm just gonna let you take it away.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you so much, Joanna, for the opportunity and the wonderful introduction. I'm so excited to be able to be here with you all and to kind of create this conversation together over the next hour. And I love, Joanna, what you said about, you know, the more we learn, the less we know. And I'm 100% in the same place. Like, as soon as I feel like I have a good understanding, it's like, oh, but did you realize also this? I'm like, ah. So there's always deepening, always spiraling. And with that, I hope all of us can kind of give ourselves that grace, that understanding that, especially when we're talking about language we use and things like that regarding gender, it's changing a lot over time. And for me, what I've found to be the most foundationally important piece of this is, Joanna, what you talk about when you talk about the energetics and the containers that we create. It's exactly that. Am I creating a space that is foundationally nurturing and open to people? Am I creating that space that says, you know I don't know, I know I don't have all the answers, and I'm open to hearing what you have experienced in your life and hearing, you know, what you were willing to share with me so I can get better and learn and grow in the process. And that's found, I feel like that's the one skill that if all of us just as a planet had, we would be so much farther along and so much more inclusive in everything that we do. Because what I do know, especially about the people on this call, is that people of all genders and people of all sexes and people of all sexual orientations need what we do. They need what we do. And I hope that if we kind of realize that and start to reframe continually how we understand things like sex, gender, and sexual orientation, it'll consistently just make our containers bigger and more inclusive for the people who need our work so much. So I'll share a couple of, I'm going to share a story and then do a little bit of definitions just to level set really quickly, because I feel like a lot of us probably have, you know, some of those definitions and stuff under control already, just to level set. And then maybe, Joanna, we could talk about some of the questions that came in just to make sure we get those off the bat. But before that, just kind of some framing, like with everything that I share, everything that I do, this is all my perspective, right? I'll share my lived experiences, my engagement with people and leaders. So nothing I say, you know, I have a connection to the military and the government, but this is all me talking, nothing representative of the government, right? I have to kind of put that out there. But also that my experiences are not representative of all LGBTQIA plus folks, of all gender nonconforming folks, that as much of the experiences that I've had have shaped my reality and my experience, that I've also recognized that I have a ton of privilege, especially as a white person who presents mostly as male in that gender nonconforming space, a ton of privilege. There are times where I may be able to blend in more and avoid violence or avoid negative conflict where other people would not be able to. So that's just like one example of that. So I understand that. And then continuing to deepen into that. And the last thing is just as a society and me personally, you know, we're constantly growing and deepening into these aspects. So the language may change tomorrow. You know, the way that we talk about this may change in 5 minutes. So we've got to stay open and willing to engage and to, again, be willing to be wrong. And some folks may have issue with that word, you know, being wrong. But for me, it was like, I had to get to that point where I was willing to be wrong about everything that I knew up to a certain point in my life regarding sexual orientation and gender, to say, yeah, I was wrong about all this stuff. And now that I understand, I can do better and I can change things moving forward. But I think a lot of the issues that we have is that some folks in our communities may not be so easy, willing to be wrong and willing to learn something new and willing to say, this thing that I believed so deeply for so long because of my religion or my family or whatever it is, was actually incorrect and harmful. And that's so scary that they will not approach it. So being able to approach this with humility is super helpful. And again, if you're a person who struggled with any of this or struggled with some of the inclusion aspects, especially around gender, which is what we're talking about today, you are in great company. I want you to be at ease, to just relax, because we're all in this together, like Joanna said. And that openness is what's going to get all of us to whatever our next iteration is individually. Foundationally, the story that I want to start with is about relationship. I'm actually going to talk about sexual orientation first, because it does, while sexual orientation and gender identity are totally separate and distinct spectrums of our existence, how I approached and handled my sexual orientation coming out directly impacts how I approach gender identity and how I approach all of the things that might be considered coming out in my world. So I grew up fundamentalist Christian. I grew up in fundamentalist church spaces. I was a preacher from a young age, as a teenager, you know, preaching from the King James Version of the Bible, very specific verses, all the thou shalt nots. I preached against homosexuality. I preached against anything but cisgender, gender identity, which we'll cover shortly too. I was a person who, although I later discovered deeply was gay and gender nonconforming, I preached against all of those things because that's how I was socialized. Those are the things that I was believed to be very true. And when I finally opened up to different ideas about it, I finally came on the information. I spent a year in study and prayer and analyzing Greek and Hebrew scripture and going through the religious processes I need to go to reconcile my own identity with what I'd been taught all my life. It was just like an awakening happened within me. And it wasn't overnight, it took a long time. And I share that with you to say, once I went through that, I wanted my mom, of course, to come to the same conclusion. But she was steeped in the same dogma that I was, the same containers for holding that space as I was. And it was not the discussions with her about Bible passages or, you know, doctrinal statements that changed her mind eventually. What eventually changed her mind, she did get to an affirming space, was relationship with me, relationship with people who were not like her, relationship with people who were other and totally outside of her normal realm of day-to-day interaction with church folks and community. At the time back then, I was part of the Gay Christian Network, which is an LGBTQ affirming Christian organization. And they had annual conferences where hundreds and eventually more than thousands of people would come together and worship and have workshops and do all these things. And I brought my mom to this 1 year, and it totally opened her up. And it wasn't just me. Like, I didn't just find some stuff online and like, ooh, he's, you know, got all the stuff he wants me to read now, right? It was communities. And she experienced what she called the presence of God in that space with people who before that time, she would not have been able to say were people who could experience the presence of God, right? So she encountered this space where worlds were colliding, and she had a very palpable cognitive dissonance. And that cognitive dissonance is just that something that is a very powerful tool of transformation in terms of being confronted with things you didn't realize were possible before, or you thought for sure couldn't coexist before. And so how do you reconcile that? How do you get past the discomfort of that cognitive dissonance to the next space? And we have a few options when it comes to that. You know, we can ignore it. We can write it off as kind of a one-off experience. We can make it the exception to the rule, or we can do the work that it takes to change our beliefs and our views and our understanding of the people around us. And it was that relationship that was that engagement in relationship that provided the deepest transformation for her. I brought her again to the conference the next year, and she became even more open to understanding things. And she'd been researching all year and growing in her understanding of these issues of sexual orientation and some work in gender identity as well. And at the end of that second conference, what she told me was, she said, I've talked to a lot of people, and the one thing I keep hearing over and over again is I hear these kids, these youth and these young adults talk about their struggles and coming out to their families is they just wish their parents, their moms, their dads could just say that they love them, and that they affirm them for who they are. And it was on the train, leaving the conference, going to the airport. And she said, I've heard that so many times. And she said, I just want you to know that I love you. And I affirm you for exactly who you are. And I hope that all these other kids get to hear the same thing from their parents one day. And of course, I broke down on the train, but we don't need to talk about that. But that was a moment that I know a lot of people don't get in the LGBT community, whether it's folks who are gay or bisexual or asexual or transgender or gender nonconforming. They often never get that. And I did get that because my mom was going to come to the next conference with me the following year that started on January 5th. But earlier that year, she was diagnosed with a rare and aggressive form of breast cancer and passed away on January 3rd that year in 2015. But I got that experience that a lot of folks don't get. And it was through relationship, right? It was through engagement. It was through willingness to be open and to learn something new. And my mom, who was a straight, heterosexual, straight Christian woman who had the same fundamentalist upbringing as I did, was also kind of cast out from her communities too. Once her friends found out that she was going to the Gay Christian Network conference and all this stuff, they started to say, well, you're falling down that slippery slope, and she lost friends over just supporting her kid. Right. So this is rampant, not only just in people who are within the LGBTQIA plus community, but also with those who love them. So I say all that to say people face often very real threats of being ostracized from community just by affiliation. And so the work here is to continue to deepen into the relationships with people, right? Sometimes the arguments that we're called to online are not worth our time. Sometimes our time is much better spent kind of getting into authentic relationship with people. And especially as we're talking about coaching and our work in Sacred Depths, that's what I see over and over again of us leading each other to, leading our clients to that deeper engagement with not only ourselves and how I see myself, how I see and understand gender within myself, but also how others see it as they bring it to me and how I see it in others and how I treat the people around me. One of the things that I've come to as well is that gender is energy. And each of us has different layers of gendered energy within us. And the systems and societies around us that prize one energy over another are the same ones that have us push down the one that is not prized, right? So when we talk about patriarchy and the society set up there, we talk about, you know, masculinity being prized over femininity. And what does that do for cisgender women, you know, who want to engage in their femininity, but are told to succeed and to excel, you have to be masculine or engage in a masculine environment? And what does that do for trans folks, whether they're, you know, transgender men, transgender women, gender nonconforming, who are doing all this deep inner work already outside of the system that says male or female binary options, right? And they're trying to reconcile that. But the options that they're being given are not even on the table, right? The options within them are not even the ones that are on the table, right? So there's a lot of opportunity for some deep work here. So let's talk about, I'm sorry, Joanna, anything you want to share at this point? I'll go over some definitions here briefly in just a moment.
Yeah, no, all is great. And I just because I always have to put a plug in for like how coaching skills show up in real life. You know, as you were talking about the willingness to be wrong and the humility, it was just reminding me so much about our creating awareness skills with clients and this idea of like the moment that we need to be right when we're with clients is the moment that we're out of the conversation. And same goes in real life as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's that openness, that humility, that, you know, well-placed humility, or like, we're not obviously going to, you know, turn into doormats or anything like that, that, you know, puts us, you know, always on the back end of that. But it's just this willingness to engage in authentic humanity with folks and help our clients do the same. So much good stuff there. So just to kind of level set briefly before we talk about some of the questions that were sent in, I wanted to go over a little bit, just some definitions. A lot of folks, especially in my work with the military and such, even outside, don't understand that sex, gender, and sexual orientation are three totally separate and distinct aspects of who we are, right? So when we talk about sex itself, we're talking about kind of the biology, the chromosomes, the reproductive systems, you know, and the ways that we're assigned either male or female at birth, typically based on our external sex organs. But sex is made up of so much more internal than it is external, right? There's both of those things that are part of sex. And, you know, when we're having children, not me, obviously, but when we're having children, it's not something that is tested for, right? About one in every 1,666 births are intersex. And so we have male and we have female and we also have intersex. And intersex means that there could be both male and female biological aspects present. There could be different parts that are missing from what we would identify as typically male or female, right? So when we talk about intersex, there are actually more than 30 different variations of intersex experiences. So there's so much more there than just the male and female dialogue that is so prominent in our society, right? It goes back to that binary thinking, and it starts here when we're talking about sex. So when we talk about gender, we kind of break that down into two categories, right? Our gender identity and our gender expression. Right? Gender identity is kind of our internal sense of maleness, femaleness, masculinity, femininity, where we are on those different spectrums, right? And it's not necessarily a spectrum from masculine to feminine, right? They're each kind of their own spectrums. You can have zero masculinity or a lot of masculinity coupled with zero femininity or a lot of femininity, right? It's never really going to be zero because there's always a mix in there. But just to kind of illustrate, there's different spectrums there that we're involved with. So that's the gender identity. And then the gender expression is just how we present ourselves externally. You know, whether thinking about the names that we have or the pronouns that we use or how we dress, our haircuts, clothing, behavior. And a lot of that is based on how society views us, unfortunately, right? It's how society says this is masculine or this is feminine. And that changes so much over time, right? I mean, the churches that I grew up in, women were not allowed to wear pants because those were for men. They had to wear a dress. You know, women were not allowed to speak because this verse says this and women should be silent in the church, right? These different things and ways society tells us we have to interact based on our sex or our gender. I wear high heels a lot when I'm out speaking and just out in general. And that's something that's stereotypically a traditionally feminine thing to do. But people don't realize the history of the high heel, right? They were originally intended for men to help them loop into their saddles and while they're riding the horses, to be able to loop into the horses. And as that kind of became a cool thing to do, it eventually grew and be spread kind of in the aristocracy in that time. I think it was 16th century. And so it's something that eventually spread into women and then eventually went away totally and then came back with the pinup models in this last century, right? So all of this stuff goes and comes and we kind of allow society to define what is masculine or feminine, right? And it's the question is always, who is doing the defining? We can say society is, right? But who has the microphone? Who is deciding what is for whom and all of this, right? So understanding that a lot of this is based on the gaze of the people around us. And so as much as we do have to talk about gender expression and what it means to wear clothing or act certain ways or haircuts or colors or whatever that might be masculine or feminine, understand that it's also totally made up, right? So giving ourselves the freedom to say, I understand that I see this way, and also a lot of it's total bullshit and we can do whatever we want. So there's a lot of freedom there, all made up. Inbal says all made up, absolutely. And then we think about too, I mean, just in the pink and blue discussion, right? When we first came out with giving, you know, babies, girls were born and they wear pink gowns, boys wear blue gowns. That was actually the reverse. Pink used to be for boys because it was considered the stronger color, and blue is for girls, right? And it just flipped. So it's so arbitrary based on marketing and dollars and what dye is cheap, like all these factors. And then we're told this is the right way. Ugh, it's total bull, right? A lot of times understanding some of these roots and the frustrating stuff can help open us up a little more to realizing that some of the natural inclinations that we have are because we have been so ingrained socially with what is right and wrong when it comes to sex and gender. And we don't have to continue to conform to those standards. But because we are so socially ingrained from birth, I mean, you talk about growing up and, you know, your parents put you potentially in a room that is one color because you're one sex at birth or identified as one sex at birth, right? To the things you watch on TV, the cartoons, even the commercials, everything is gendered. Boys play with trucks, girls play with dolls, all the stuff that I think we're getting better at societally, but they are so ingrained, right? So we work through all of those things. And I think for me, when I started to realize all of this stuff, the stuff that I taught was wrong, was either a lie or just flat out inaccurate, it was like, oh my gosh, what else have I been wrong about? It's like this internal dry heaving going, oh my gosh, what else do I need to get out of my system, right? So if you're ever feeling that way with any of this, totally normal. Just allow yourself to go through the process, right? One last thing that I'll share with you in terms of just kind of framing and definitions and things like that are just understanding where that what we're understanding now about sex, gender, and sexual orientation is not as new as we think it is. there were researchers in Europe who were doing a lot of really incredible research on sex and gender and sexual orientation, although those weren't the words that they used at the time, right? As late as the 1700s, has anybody ever heard the name Magnus Hirschfeld before? Magnus Hirschfeld? He was a Jewish and gay man who was a pioneer in LGBTQ rights. He started his advocacy work back in 1896. 1896, right? He founded the Institute of Sexology in 1919 in Germany. Had a huge library, so much study and work done with people who were not in the heterosexual cisgender population at that time. Again, early 1900s. And because of Nazi Germany, all of his research was burned during the Holocaust. We lost so much of that. In addition to everything else that we lost in that awful genocide, we lost all of the progress too that was made for folks who were not cisgender, who were not heterosexual. There were so many advances made in the fields of psychology, psychoanalysis, and gender. And once a lot of those psychologists and folks moved to the US, a lot of them chose to blend in, right? For good reason during that time. So even folks who may have brought some of that to the US were just, unfortunately, it just didn't happen. And so sometimes it can feel like we're starting over with a lot of this because of things that we've lost by the atrocities of people around the world who are unwilling to understand people who are different from them. So much history there. And I often wonder, you know, where would we be today if none of that had happened? Where would we be today if all of that had continued on the path that it was going of more inclusion? And I bring that up because a lot of the pushback that I get in certain settings is generally from folks who think all of this is a new creation. And, you know, back in my day, we didn't do this kind of thing, right? And so once people start to understand more of the history and understand more of the context, there can be some really great openings for discussion and for deepening. So Joanna, did you want to talk about a couple of the questions that are in already, or?
Yeah, let's start with that and then go from there. I have got questions too. And awesome. I'm sure there's questions live in the group too. But hold on, I just lost a second here. Okay, so my computer is being a little weird and I can't read all of this question, but I think I can put in the pieces. So what about the topic of creating a safe space so that all gender identities are included? And I can't read the end of this, but I think, and Mark and Jenny, this is your question. You know, if you wouldn't mind coming on and asking, because I can't access the whole question for some reason.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember our exact question, but I think I know the theme of it. Do you want to talk about gender essentialism, masculine, feminine? Do you want to? So I think what our question was around is a lot of times, in society in general, but especially in the coaching industry, you'll hear a lot of terms like masculine and feminine, and you know, you've got, you know, divine feminine, whatever, and you hear these terms used a lot. And what I'm wondering if you can speak into that. Like personally, Mark and I find those terms quite oppressive because it just feels like these kind of like gender expression, these arbitrarily made up boxes of qualities, where often, you know, the masculine will become a bucket for sort of negative qualities, feminine for positive, but even the feminine ones that are positive don't fit me, so they feel oppressive, you know? And so I'm just wondering, is that kind of stuff too, masculine, feminine, in spiritual circles, you hear this talked a lot about as energy, but I've always felt like that's just kind of made up, gender essentialist, it's felt very oppressive to me, and yet it's all around us. So I'm not sure what my question is, but I'm wondering if you can speak into that.
Yeah, well, and one of the challenges that I feel in the coaching industry and in working with people is there's almost this idea now that like we like it's positive to get back to like your feminine energy or your masculine energy. It's talked about in this way. And I've always, like when I first start, so I'm in my mid 50s. And when I first started hearing the terms like gender nonconformity and all this stuff, it was like a relief to me because I always felt like I didn't fit in. But I defined myself based on the terms that I knew of at the time. And now, I don't know, I guess I'm just like looking for a language to talk about these energies that help people to be all of who they are and not to just perpetuate stereotypes, you know,
totally.
That you're essentially more this way because of the body you were born into.
Right. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. It's such a great question. And I think, you know, what I'm hearing you say is when you hear a lot of the masculine, feminine, especially when it comes to spirituality, it can feel kind of constricting. And I think that's a really important thing to note, is that for some people, that language does feel really constricting and restrictive. And for those folks, I would say, don't use them, right? But there are some instances where I think folks are drawn to that, and it's for different reasons. And especially when we go back and we look at societally, right, what we're kind of living with right now and how we define masculinity and femininity. For some folks like myself who, you know, grew up in very hyper-masculine environments, knowing that I sure as heck didn't fit in there, I've always been, all of my closest friends have always been women. I've always been drawn to more feminine, women-centric spaces. Even in adulthood, even in the coaching industry, I've always been drawn to divine feminine. I've been drawn to divine feminine spaces, right? And so I would find folks who that felt really good with, and I would connect with them and would see if I was still welcome there. And when I was, I would engage, and it was amazing. And so that was really affirming and supportive for me to be able to engage with that kind of energy, knowing that I've been living kind of the polarity for so long. And when we look at it from a polarity perspective, and those are the labels and definitions we're working with, still leveraging the polarity of those current definitions can be really helpful in moving us forward. So with that too, I totally agree. Like we there's a space here for us to create new definitions and to lead the way as we redefine some of these things. Some folks deal with, you know, dynamic versus receptive. Some folks deal with kind of a magnetism and the, you know, the push pull and the send out and sending out and attracting. There's different ways of talking about it. But one of the things that I think I'm coming to with this is allowing myself to just be more inclusive of wherever you are on the spectrum, you know, you're welcome here. So when it comes to language specifically, absolutely, the words that we use are really important. And for me, it's become less about the feminine versus the masculine, but it's been more about understanding that this is not the binary option. This binary option is false, right? So it's saying the both and of the feminine and the masculine, there's always a mix here. And there's a bunch of different points all along the spectrum, right? So a lot of folks in their web copy and things like that, you'll see, I work with men and women who XYZ. Well, what if I said, I work with people of all genders who XYZ? What if in this simple phrasing that I use, I work to include people of all genders, wherever they are on that spectrum, all sexual orientations, and start to release that notion that things are always an either or, because they're just not. And I think the either or is where the constrictive mechanism comes in. I don't think we have to get rid of men, women, masculine, feminine. I think there's folks who love being in that feminine energy and love being in that masculine energy. I think there's a lot of room to deeply question how we define those things. And room to say all genders, all sexes and things like that, if that makes sense. Is that helpful at all?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, awesome. And part of that too is going back to letting folks define themselves for you, right? In terms of like, I think you mentioned gender essentialism, right? Saying, oh, you're a man, so this is what I know about you, right? Our brains do that automatically, like it's just a shortcut, that's how they're wired, got it. So we can chill about it, but knowing that it's happening helps us to step in and say, what am I going to do when I notice that happening? And letting people tell me who they are instead of assuming the things that I assume about them based on my own socialization and upbringing. Another way is, you know, if you're someone who says, you know, I work with women who XYZ, you know, and this is going to be different for everybody depending on the work that you do. But what if you said, I work with mostly women who XYZ, or finding another way to leave that door open for folks who might not identify as women or might not identify fully as women or might be somewhere else along the spectrum, if that's something that you are open to doing in the work you're doing within yourself, right?
Definitely. That's really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Welcome. Got some in the notes too. Sorry, go ahead, Jenna.
No, I was saying thank you as well. And that's a question that I find myself stumbling. I'll be in the middle of teaching and I'm like, oh, wait, that's the old way of thinking. And so I find myself stumbling on that a lot too. So
Can I make one point on that specifically, Joanna? I just have to point out that the stumble is perfect for all of us who are stumbling. Stumble. Like it's this thing that says, I have to be perfect now already, that myth of perfection that was like one of my favorite modules, right? That's going to be the thing that trips us up. It's not the stumbling. Because when people see us stumbling, it shows that we're human and we're working on it. And we all need models of people who are working on it. I was in another workshop a couple of weeks ago where the teacher was trying to stop saying you guys with everything, right? And every time she would stop, she'd say, you guys, you all. And it was like 47 times. Super distracting if you let it be distracting, but I loved it. I ate it up. I loved it because you're doing the work, right? I know you're working on it. And that's all that we want. And that tells me that you are working on it and you want to be inclusive. And that's what I want to see from folks more than anything else.
Mm, love that. Yeah, so super helpful. Good to remember not to, I need to be perfect too. There's a great question from Nima in the chat. She's saying, thank you so much, Stanley, for all of this. Can you speak to any specific ways to notify others that I'm a safe person? For example, including pronouns and email signatures, et cetera, to prevent harm and identify myself as an ally and advocate.
Absolutely. I love that question so much. Pronouns is a big thing. And a lot of folks say, well, you know, why do I need pronouns? I'm just what I read at past that is just like, I'm just a normal person, right? And I know we don't intend that, but that can be what is felt. I don't need pronouns because I'm normal. You're the abnormal one, so you tell me your pronouns, right? And so that can be the implied judgment there. So when folks of all gender identities say, hey, I can introduce and give you my pronouns, it says one, I'm a safe person, I've done some work, I understand that this is a cool thing to do to create safe space, but it also affirms the fact that I can never know someone's gender just by looking at them. It doesn't matter who you are. I can assume, I can deduce, but I can't know until I ask you. And even if I think I know your gender, you might have different pronouns that you're more comfortable with. So just ask. That's a great question. So pronouns for sure. I would say if you have, you know, public-facing websites and things like that, to have a statement in there. Just as much as anti-racism is important to have there, have that statement of inclusion for gender identity. You know, I affirm all, you know, people along the entire spectrum of gender, sex, sexual orientation, people of all genders, whatever you need to say that's in your words that says, hey, I understand that it's more than the binary that's forced on us, right? I think those are great starts.
All right, looks like Rana has her hand raised. You want to go ahead, Rana?
Hi, Stanley and Joanna. Thank you so much for this conversation. Deeply appreciative of it. And Stanley, I'm curious with your body of wisdom and or knowledge about the term that I hear a lot and used in Indigenous conversations around two spirits. And that definition, and I have heard multiple different definitions of that term. Mm-hmm. And so it gets a little confusing from that perspective. And I'm just wondering if you, on your experience, have any insights with regard to the use of that term.
Sure. I don't have super specific insights, and I'm going to add that to my things to work on for sure. But what I do know is that not all Indigenous communities use that term.
I know.
And a lot of folks, I mean, just like some folks, say Native American as if it's one culture, right? Obviously it's not. It's many, many, many different. And the same goes for how different Indigenous communities and cultures understand gender identity. So I would say there's a plethora in those communities as well. But that's something I'd have to do a little more research on too, to see exactly like where and when and who and how they define it. But I know it's not all one kind of unified definition.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Just curious.
Yeah. Great question.
Right. Sonia, this is back to Nima's question and what you were sharing. Sonia's saying there are so many blind spots. What makes someone a safe person?
For me, what makes someone a safe person is knowing that is when they show me they're a safe person. And they do that by, you know, we've talked about pronouns, but just in conversation. How are people responding to news about LGBT folks in the media when they see things like that happen? Do people respond at all? How do they respond? If they're using their pronouns and things like that, that's super helpful. Part of this too is, I think I can kind of sense when someone has a good understanding of this based on the conversations that we have. And part of this is going to come up when, just like with any other kind of, you know, microaggression, right? It's like, oh, you're different from me. Tell me everything I need to know now about your people. Right. And that's not necessarily the right thing to do. Right. I think a lot of the times we have really good intentions. We want to get to know people. Tell me your story. How did you learn this? Tell me all of X, Y, Z. Some of that's helpful. But when we're expecting everybody to other people to educate us, it shows that maybe we're not safe to the point that we've done our own research and have our own understanding and can bring value to having an equitable conversation with someone instead of expecting them to teach us everything we need to know about something, if that makes sense. So especially when we're talking about trans folks, you know, not everybody knows people in person who are trans or gender nonconforming. It's a pretty small segment of the population, but it's 2021. We've got TED Talks, we've got YouTube. Earlier I talked about building relationship. It might be you engaging in relationship with a TED Talk or a YouTube, you know, channel, right? Obviously it's not the same thing as a person, but allowing them to share their story with you creates that kind of relational aspect of you being able to hear somebody's story from their point of view and allowing yourself to integrate that into your life and the way that you interact with folks. I think once we do some of that and we start to engage with folks, it becomes a safer space to have even more dialogue. But for me, it's not so much what people do unless they're saying overtly transphobic or stuff. It's not so much about what people do, but it's a lot of the time it's about what people aren't doing or haven't done. That tells me that probably not the safest space. Does that help at all?
Manley, I'm so glad this question came up. And I'm glad also that you're bringing up this issue that it can be a microaggression when we ask someone that doesn't have a privilege that we do to educate us. And like you say, like it can be so well-meaning, but the piece that I want to add that I've learned through the years is that sometimes when we ask those questions, what we don't realize it's immense emotional labor sometimes for an individual to have to have that pressure of that education or to feel like they have to prove a point or whatever it is. And I love what you're saying, that it's only that when we're in those deeper relationships. And I think, tell me if this is true, and I would ask permission, ask permission to even ask the question and see if the person I'm in relationship with wants to respond and feels like that is something that is valuable for them.
Absolutely. And I really appreciate you bringing that home too, because it's, I'll speak from my personal experience, right? When I first came out, most of my friends were in the, you know, fundamentalist leaning church communities and things like that. So it got to the point where once people started to realize that I was gay. And it wasn't because I'd chosen to, it was because somebody saw that I had seemed to have a lot of gay friends on MySpace and told our youth pastor, and he called me in his office and confronted me and to see what was going on. But that's a whole other story. But it then after that point, every conversation began to be like, hey, let's grab lunch. Hey, I wanted to see what you thought about these 6 Bible verses that talk about homosexuality and what you think about that and things like that, right? And that's a totally different experience, but it also is kind of the same energy of now I have to do that labor over and over and over again, and explain to them over and over and over again. And oh, by the way, I have to get it perfect, because if I don't get it perfect, they're going to keep doing this to other people and I want to make sure I get it right. So it's that extra burden, right? And the same comes into play with gender identity, right? So I see you. So what's up with your shoes? Like, what's going on with that? Or you could just be like, hey, nice outfit. High five. All right. Maybe when I get to know you more, I'll ask you, you know, some more questions, right? Because a lot of folks, I would say there are some folks in, whether it's transgender communities, gender nonconforming communities, or other communities who do want to actively have the conversations because that's their work. That's what they're called to. I am one of those people. But the vast majority of folks just want to live their lives, right? They're not called to be an advocate or spokesperson for people who are like them. So putting that burden on them can be such a draining experience when all they want to do is get up, have their coffee, go to work, go home, and Netflix, right? That's it. They don't want to have 10 conversations during lunch about gender identity and sexual orientation, right? So thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, that's great. Simona's asking, what language would you suggest for folks that work with daughters plus versus sons?
What language would I suggest for folks who work with daughters plus sons?
Versus sons. I think what it means is don't want to assume that it's daughters. Or Simona, maybe you can even come on, because I don't want to misinterpret your question.
Yeah, and I've been playing around with this thank you. Daughters plus in my mind is if someone because what I specifically work with is modern mother-daughter relationships. Mm-hmm. So mother-son is different. But if someone was a daughter when they were young, they're going to have potentially those things they want to talk about. Or someone is a daughter now, you know, like if they identify as a daughter, but not if they identify as a son, is how I can help them and support them. And I want to just be really clear.
Yeah. So two things come up for me when you say this. And again, I'm just sharing with you and you can tell me if this is accurate for you or not. I think I'm learning as much from this as anybody else is. So one thing is the assumption that mothers and daughters are always different from mothers and sons. Like how true is that as we're thinking about the gender implications and how we define that with our kids, just a thought to think about. But then the other piece is taking a step back and saying, when we're talking about parent and child relationships, I actually just lost the second point. It went way out of my brain. I'm not even gonna pretend I didn't lose it. There was something there though.
I love the question, the challenge back to think about. Yeah.
How different are they and why is that? And how much of that is societal versus parents and child relationship? That could be even more expansive if we had more inclusive understandings of gender and gender roles between parents and children.
Something for me to digest. And if you think of your other point, well.
I will.
If you don't, that's helpful food for thought. Thanks.
Okay.
That just blew my mind. So thank you. We have a lot to think about there. Inbal.
I hope, can you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm. Sure can.
Okay. I'm speaking into my phone, but I'm looking at the computer. So, you know, I think that there's also this is also around kind of like identifying, not just like the gender inclusive statements, but also like who I feel like I can serve best. Yes. And so much of what, of like the work that I do with clients. So I'm cis hetero, I'm cis, not hetero. But that, you know, so for example, like a trans man, like I would be able to probably serve and support if they were like, I mean, depending on, I guess it's like, how do you, but I also like, I guess it's like that people could choose who most like resonates for them, but because so much of it has to do with, you know, how someone was conditioned and like which, like the society. Because sometimes mm-hmm. I feel that it's like, yeah, I really have to check myself because some of my clients are way more traditional than I am. So in a way, it's also because I don't know if it's how I appear, also the ways that like that I have changed. I don't know if there's a question there.
I feel one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love how you're describing this because I think our brains work a lot similarly. Like I spiral into things like this, just like that too. So I'm totally following it. It's great. I think there are a lot of great questions in there because part of it, I think a good activity would be if I were to describe what I do for my clients without using any gendered terms, what would that look like? And would it still be as powerful as if I used gendered terms? Would my ideal client still find me regardless of gendered terms? And if they do, that for me, that says they're still totally resonant with exactly what you're doing. And if you're a person who's done some of this extra work, like you have, and you understand the pronouns and some of the transgender, gender nonconforming considerations and things like that, you're gonna be so much a better fit than someone who hasn't done any of that yet or hasn't put that work into their copy or into the ways that they approach all of this. So the other piece of that for me was, obviously we don't wanna serve every single person on the planet, right? I know I'm not for everybody, but I trust that the right people are gonna find me based on what I'm putting out there, and it's not gonna be because I said I work with women, right? Every woman on the planet doesn't think I'm awesome, right? So it's like, I think there's some things that we can question and experiment with and play with and see what the results are, if that's helpful at all.
It's super helpful. And it also makes me, yeah, just to add that, right? It's like, it's also one part of the identity. There's like so many other things that may or may not resonate, in that ultimately like none of us are just reduced to this one thing that's also like ever shifting.
Exactly. And one of the things that was most powerful for me, because I'd never heard the term gender fluid, gender nonconforming, before I started to kind of have some of that lived experience and started Googling the heck out of it. But when I found that word, that term gender fluid, which can include folks who feel like their gender changes and oscillates over time, it was like just immense relief. Like, oh, this is so perfect. This is exactly a big part of what I experience, right? So for me, someone who oscillates and experiences different aspects of gender in different ways, like it was truly life-giving to even find that language. But all that to say, when we're talking about the words that we use to attract or call in or create our clients, it's like, what is the thing that's going to feel most expansive for me, that's going to resonate most with the people who I'm here to serve, without overly limiting it to things that may change over time? And including not the things themselves changing, but how we understand ourselves changing over time.
Such great questions in there. I think we have time for one more. Mindy.
Hi, thank you. I so appreciate this talk. I was just thinking in terms of, you know, part of the education we go through with coaching is we hear over and over again, don't be too general, don't be too broad, narrow mm-hmm. things down. And so I want to be, I am a safe person. I want to put that out there. And I want to be inclusive. But like you said, I don't know how, maybe not everybody can do that, but I don't want someone to think I'm not friendly or an advocate. But there is like a specific client that I'm looking at. And so how do you, I don't know, it seems like this kind of difficult balancing act, you know, not wanting to offend anybody. I don't want to offend anybody. And I don't want to feel, I don't want anyone to feel left out.
Right.
But I also know that I feel like I have something to give to a certain sect of the population.
Yeah.
So how do you balance that?
Absolutely. Such a beautiful question, right? So a lot of this has to do, in my opinion, with this agreement that we've already made about the definitions we're working with, right? So if I believe that I am only called to serve cisgender women, which means, you know, women who were assigned the female sex at birth and whose gender identity is also aligned with that, then would I put that in my copy? I serve cisgender women who do XYZ, right? And if that would make me uncomfortable, I would want to ask why? What is that about that saying that's making me uncomfortable? If I'm going to be specific and say I serve cisgender women, and knowing that excludes transgender women, what is the conversation I then have about that? Because when we back up and look at the definitions, when we choose to say, I just serve women, women should be inclusive of all people who identify as women.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But dominant society says, well, when I say women, I just mean cisgender women. I don't have to say cisgender women because those are the normal women and everybody else is other, right? So again, these are just different ways you can think about this and say, are the words that I'm using accurately, am I accurately using them and defining them? Or is the way that I'm using these words unintentionally oppressing a group of people mm-hmm. because they are not included in the way that I use this word? It's not to say that you can't niche down, right? But just to, and there's no, I don't think there's a one answer for everybody, right? But niche down and ask this question, what does this mean if I use this and if this is what I mean?
Thank you.
Yeah, great question.
So powerful. Stanley, thank you so much. We have one more hand raised. Do you think we have time for it? And it's totally okay if we don't.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you so much for making time for this. Yeah. I have a question about pronouns. How do you also include people that may not necessarily want to out their gender identity by naming the pronouns?
That's a great question. I think for me, so I'm just going to give you my gut response because that's what I'm teaching myself to go with, right? For someone who is wanting to remain closeted, they're going to give you the pronouns that they want you to have, right? But when you create that space to say, hey, we all use our pronouns here, you can use whatever pronouns you want. I may change my pronouns tomorrow and that's okay. But for today, I'm going to use the pronouns that I'm safe with in your company. And as I get to know you in this organization, maybe I'll shift to outing myself, right? Because I'm now comfortable with you to share, hey, I know I told you this, but I wanted to make sure it was safe here. So these are actually the pronouns. These are actually my pronouns, right? That's how I would see that journey going. I don't feel that it would be harmful to create that space for someone who is still closeted for whatever reason, because they still have the choice to choose their pronouns. And if you have experiences that are different from that, I would love to hear that and see where I could adjust that as well.
Thank you for that answer. Yeah, that's helpful. The like using the pronouns that you feel safe with.
Right.
That part is really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Stanley, my heart is so full right now. I just feel in such gratitude for you and your willingness to show up and share everything that you've shared today. I've learned so much, and I can feel the energy of the group, just all that we've learned. So just thank you. And I know that there's more to learn from you. Could you share with us if we want to check out your work and learn more, how can we do that?
Sure. I will share with you that I've been on active duty Army orders for about the last 2 years or year and a half. So things are a little bit behind, but you can go to my website, stanleyedward.com, or follow me on Instagram at realstanleyed. That's probably the best way to keep in touch. And as I move back to more civilian leaning life in the next few months and update those things, you'll see them there.
Perfect. Thank you. And I'll make sure I'll post them in both of our Facebook groups as well.
Thank you.
Everybody has that info. Again, thank you so much. My heart is so wide open. Yeah. And thank you everyone who is here and just for holding the space with such care and openness and for all of your energy and your questions.
Thank you all so much. Yeah, someone's such a beautiful conversation.
The link to the Huffington Post article, and I'll do that too.
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you
so much, everybody. So much love for all of you. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Yeah.